You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 24th of May, 2014, on Monocle 24.
A whole new crop of weird and wonderful independents, the classic staples, and some print markets that get top marks. From Illinois to Madrid, we scrutinize and savor the magazine offering. Today, we huddle round and have a focus flick at some titles, new and old, that are hitting the shelves. We celebrate the boom of independent magazines, but look at what the good old glossies are still doing right. From German architecture to Japanese urban farming, and from Spanish interior design to weekend supplements, the presses have been busy, and we look at the results with our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell. All of that and much more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to Studio 2 here at Midori House for this very special edition of The Stack. Special because Daddy's back around the table and I'm joined by my very keen associate and colleague, our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell. Hello, sir.
Hi.
All well?
All well. I thought you were going to call me prodigal son then. Daddy's back.
I could have done that. we're not throwing out the format completely, but I've been on the road for about 3 weeks. I think I've managed maybe two check-ins with Tom Edwards as he's been manning this desk and seat in my absence. But I probably say there's about three big UPS boxes coming back from sort of various points. One has arrived. I was in Stockholm. So I've got some of the spoils of a visit to Papercut. And just earlier in the week, as many of our listeners will know, we were touring Germany. We were in Munich and then we were in Frankfurt and Hamburg. So I've just got a lot of things which I wanted to discuss. I know that, Rich, you'd been sort of hit by a couple of rainy days and had some epiphanies about, as we said in the intro, we want to talk about a lot of the independents today. But I think both of us also probably want to spend a little bit of time talking about just, many of the good old things that the established publishers, crank out month in, month out, and in many cases, continue to get better, though a lot of people often sort of point to the decline of the glossy sector, or at least the work of the established publishers.
Absolutely. And we've got a whole raft of independents there, and we celebrate independent print, and so we should. But the epiphany I had this week was perhaps looking at four or five of them that I'm not sure if we've hit a kind of critical mass or something similar, but nothing seems to stick right now. They all seem to be on a smallish format. They all seem to be on uncoated paper. Mm. They don't bother with cover lines. And I think there's a reason. It's because there's not a lot of content in there. They don't seem to celebrate. And I was thinking, in my house, there's two types of magazine that we get, and one is a glossy, and that tends to get read and well-thumbed, and it kicks around for 5 or 6 weeks until it either gets filed or recycled. Mm. And the other is a very well-to-do, nice design piece that kind of gets looked at once and then carefully put on the shelf and kind of never looked at again. And I think all these independent magazines are fantastic, but I think most people get into journalism and magazines because they've got a favourite glossy somewhere along the line that just caught their eye and they kept collecting it. Mm. And whether that's an old Harper's Bazaar or a Spanish AD or a certain edition of GQ, I think we're all kind of forgetting a little bit about glossies and what actually they can do.
You've done your own really sort of producer's role this week, Rich, so I can tell it's been a light one, obviously, on the production side upstairs. You've created three different food groups for us today. You've got the Doing It Right, which I thought we should start on a high note. Then you want to talk about a series of independents that you pulled together. And then you've got some glossies. And I'll probably just, I brought down a series of things as well, which I will try to sort of fit into those various areas. On the who's getting it right side, where do you want to start?
I mean, you've just come back from Germany. We talk about it often as a good place for independence. I do feel that Germany does still get it right on the independent front. I think it's a slightly drier mag, this Bauhaus mag, but it's, of course I'm going to like it. It's a celebration of Helvetica, but it's just a lot of information in there and it's displayed so nicely. It kind of makes you want to keep it and take your time. And I think it's what's good about it is purely the amount of content, the amount of words. They don't try and stretch an article too far and use too much white space.
On every level, from a production point of view, this is a little bit, it's actually coming up to a year old, this particular one, but it's great, partly because it ties in with the season, but it has a tropical theme, and this is the fifth issue that they've done, but it's Die Zeitschrift, der Stiftung Bauhaus Dessau, the Bauhaus Dessau Foundation's magazine, and I like that here you take, of course, you know, a topic and of course, you know, a revered school of architecture and urbanism in many ways. And then it's just this great overlay of throwing you into summer and looking at all of the design forces that have really made it work. I mean, not to mention just, I would never, ever throw this away.
Exactly. And I think that's something else. I think that, you know, from an early age, when people get into journalism and magazine making, should we say, I think making something that you want to collect is always a benchmark that you should have, definitely.
Yeah. Next up?
There's a couple of issues of Nora magazine, and this is out of Japan. Just a good example of if you're going to do one thing well and that thing happens to be charm. I mean, look to Japan, because I think they just do charming magazines, like it's just become so effortless for them. And it's an independent, it's a little niche subject about farmers markets, but it makes you want to go, it makes you want to cook. I think that's a great kind of send-off from a magazine to make you prompt you to do something.
Yeah, we were looking at issues, one from last winter and then there's summer 2013. But as one cover line says, you know, feel good, feels good, which to me is such a jazz. It's just that sort of Japanese play on English, which is so whimsical and so smart sometimes in a way that even left in the hands of our editor, Andrew Tuck, you know, he'd never sort of be able to crank one out like that either.
No, it is fascinating how they just have this sweetness. Their understanding of the English language, they can get it to be so sweet. And yet, yeah, you could sit a couple of copywriters down in a room for a week and they wouldn't come up with anything like that.
No, and I was I was at a couple of places. I was at Shibuya Booksellers, which is around the corner where we'll potentially be relocating our office in Tokyo to. And so I was looking at some magazines there last week. And then, of course, spending a bit of time in Tsutaya. And one of the really exciting things that I heard, you know, in Japan is that, you know, we always talk about T-Site and just what an amazing outlet and store it is. And now that they just announced in the Nikkei, I think it was, that they want to now do 100 of them in Japan. And it's just, it's so exciting to see that you hear someone who's completely reinventing the model. And one of the new things which was there, which I thought is, it's incredible because they've got this great kid section. You know, they do parenting magazines so well. There's so much which is devoted to the family, and you've created a retail environment, yeah, where everyone could go out. And if your family ending up at even Denny's at 10 o'clock at night and you want to take your kids to the bookstore, what was incredible is they've actually added a children's clinic in the bookstore now, which, bonkers. You could imagine just someone saying, well, this is non-core to what you do. But then you think, well, you've got this place where kids can watch movies and play with blocks and toys and do all kinds of things. And yeah, why not, you know, throw them at the doctor as well?
Why not? It sounds perfect.
And just going back to this too, and looking at this copy of Nora, I just love this. And we're always sort of looking at the entrepreneur. We've covered 246 Common, which is this great development in Omotesando in Tokyo. But I just love the Shozo Coffee Store, which is this little tiny hutch, leafy. But, you know, it's up against a bit of a monster of a building. But somehow, and again, it's through the use of photography. It is paper stock. But I think what's interesting about what this magazine does, yes, it feels independent. But I don't know, I feel they've gone like an extra 100% than a lot of titles that we do seem to get.
Yeah, and everything on that, everything on every page feels original. It doesn't feel pushed by a PR or anything like that. It's just a work of love.
Mm. Do we jump back to Germany from Japan? Anything else?
I was going to mention briefly Men's Nonno from Japan. We often discuss Brutus and Popeye, and I think sometimes poor old Men's Nonno doesn't get a mention. But I think, again, in terms of content and the amount of things you can buy from a Japanese fashion title, it would scare your bank manager, basically, if he saw all the things you wanted to buy.
Well, it would. And this is the other thing. And I think the other title which deserves a mention, and maybe we should spend a bit more time on another week, but is also the evolution of Uomo magazine. Now, this is not L'Uomo Vogue. This is just Japanese Uomo. It has nothing to do with Condé Nast. And that has just come on leaps and bounds. And again, you know, I think we all love Popeye photographically, and of course our fashion director Akio is also the fashion editor of that magazine as well, so there seems to be a close relationship to us in many ways. But you know, the models are younger, it's a bit more street, and I think what's great about what Uomo does, it's very much, I think, in the target of where I feel the Monocle reader is as well. And again, just the characters they find, the type of street reportage that they do, the composition of the stories, it would be sort of a year's worth of GQs to even get, I think, a quarter of the content you get in actually one issue of one of those magazines.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening at times. But, I mean, they're very well placed in Tokyo. I mean, you know the amount of things you can pick up there. But it's fantastic. It's just fantastic.
Why don't we just grab one more from Germany, and maybe before we sort of shift gears and maybe head off for a break as well.
New one here, I think, Stad Aspect. Maybe this falls slightly into the falling through the cracks independent. Again, I saw it this week. It was, you know, you look at the cover, you get quite excited, but then actually a couple of flicks and you sort of feel like, I'm not so sure. I mean, take a look, see what you think. It's in that sort of independent, not quite sure if it's attention grabbing enough.
The cover line, Stadtaspekte, die dritte Seite der Stadt, the third side of the city. Yeah, and it is interesting on a first flick that, yeah, and the first thing we come across are a series of different people in sort of various professions, nice portraits. But then I'm sort of wondering from an urbanism point of view where they're taking me around the world slightly. Seems to be sort of lacking a curiosity in terms of rhythm that you'd want to go back and engage with it. You are listening to The Stack. It is a Saturday here on Monocle 24. We're going to go away for a very short break. I'm joined by our creative director, Richard Spencer-Powell, just having a bit of a mag gab fest here today, but we're back right after this.
Monocle 24 is your 24-hour-a-day international radio service. Based in the heart of London, with contributions from our bureau in Hong Kong, Tokyo, New York, Toronto and Zurich, and reporters in more than 30 countries, we broadcast a mix of news, discussion, features, reportage, reviews, music and more. From retail to travel, food to urbanism, business to film, Monocle 24 has it covered.
One of the things that I would like to allude to, which is very much the kind of thing that you're doing here, is you're having this kind of discussion. But the discussion that needs to take place, where the forward thinking needs to come from, is from the brains trusts and the think tanks, and they're not doing it.
To call it an international conference, that's difficult in itself. The really difficult thing is then to start to implement the conclusions.
I was actually the last correspondent to send dispatches by carrier pigeon. It's not something I'm proud of.
There are two kinds of games. The games that uses the city, and the other kind is the city that uses the games.
Plus, our carefully curated playlist is the soundtrack to your day, stretching from Stockholm to Sydney, Brooklyn to Bogota.
It was like entering the gates of heaven.
You can hear us live at monocle.com, catch up with anything you may have missed on our Time Shift player, download our bespoke app for your smartphone, and hear it all on iTunes.
I like the sense that you just have no idea where it's going to go.
Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. And as I said, our creative director Richard Spencer-Powell has three food groups that we're talking about today in terms of magazines. Top of the show, we talked about really what we liked, at least the best of Japan and also Germany, though Rich wasn't sort of too keen on the Urbanism magazine, which just hit our desk at Stadtaspekte. But otherwise, everything sort of fared reasonably well. But you want to talk about the independents, and I'm going to just warn our listeners, I think we're sort of up for, we set it up at the top of the show as well, maybe some of the issues and challenges. So Headline.
Well, the headline is there are no headlines, or not cover lines. Here is a selection of some of these independent magazines that came into the studio this week. We talk about just being very unmemorable, but I don't find that any of these things...
There's good sound effects in this one. I just opened up Winter Magazine. Love, cold, and other emotions, including crinkly wax paper.
Well, this week's felt a little bit wintry. Mm. You know, it's got a black cover. And again, it's just the content just seems to pass you by. You do one flick and it seems to have gone. I mean, here's another one that's called Edict. Again, no cover lines. It's a freebie. It's perfect bound, so good on them for that.
Yeah.
But again, just doesn't seem to have much content. I don't really know who the readership will be. I don't think I'd look out for issue two.
This landed on my desk and I couldn't tell if it was a portfolio piece for a printing company. There is certainly some nice printing. There's some nice imagery in it. Then I got to the back and then I could see that there was a small press release. It's, you know, New Free Quarterly. It's launched. It talked about the distribution and outlets across Europe and elsewhere. And Edict, it seems to have a lot of sort of various creative fuel behind it. So Azo and Hasselblad and Braun Color, they have the logos down as partners at the bottom. I can't tell if they were involved in terms of barter deals or if they actually threw cash at it. Maybe to a lot of readers, it doesn't matter. But I think the core person who's fanatical about magazines, who might be interested in repro, etc., I think would be interested to know, again, as much as someone who's just a passionate consumer.
Absolutely. And it just feels like the articles are just six images spread over 14 pages, some words, and, you know, kind of like no explanation, nothing. It's just, you don't quite know what, if I had to put that on the newsstand, I wouldn't know
where to go?
Absolutely whereabouts to
go. Okay, so you're not going to be running out and grabbing the next free issue of Edict. Winter, no, even though it's got some nice wax paper. Now you've got Suitcase in front of you.
A Suitcase, again, it looks like they've put a lot of effort into it, but I think the design is just a bit inconsistent. Again, I don't know who it's for, where I'm supposed to stop. It's just like an endless flick of, feels like I could take 5 sections from all of these together, bind them, remove the cover lines and give it an odd title, and then you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. They all kind of merge into one.
I brought just a couple of other things which I picked up at Papercut, and I was interested to see Made, the 3rd edition. I'm always a bit of a sucker for a nice tactile stock. I think we all love a dog cover, and this has this wonderful husky, or it could be a malamute or something, but I think it's a husky. But I just love on the back that his eyes are closed.
Beautiful.
Now, I prefer, of course, to have an ad on the outside back cover, because I think this is, it's again another example of going through a magazine where I always sort of wonder about the funding model, because I don't see any advertising in it, and yet you've got, a very expensively produced title. Probably something that I would collect, though. I would hold on to it, and I just, if no other reason, then I love the dog cover, and I like that you've got husky eyes wide open and closed.
The cover's genius, and they're not easy to shoot dogs. We've had a husky on our cover, and it was quite a pain, but... But yeah, I think, if they want to put the cover price up because they haven't got enough commercial presence, fair enough. And I think when you do that, you need to then deliver some value on paper and on photography and on content. And they've certainly done a nice job on the design and the paper stocks. It is very nice and good typesetting, and it's collectible, which I think is a good start.
Mm. Just probably we should make the transition slightly, because we do want to talk about glossies. And here is a glossy, which is very much... in the independent camp. It's System Magazine. It's their 3rd issue, £7, €10, $18 cover price. They've got a belly band on it, which is often sort of a bit of a no-no for a magazine, but obviously this is not sort of super high circ, so it probably lives on sort of more rarefied newsstands, and it's not having to fight its way, at Terminal 3 WH Smith or somewhere like that. Kind of an interesting cover of Jürgen Teller on an exercise bike in a high-cut red short. And against this wonderful backdrop of this china cabinet, which looks quite Germanic. In fact, I do see a Bierstein in there, so we'll assume that it was shot somewhere in Germany. What I like about this is that they have a proper lineup of advertising. It is commercial, and yet I think they're sort of playing with just a variety of certainly different stories visually, some of the fashion, not necessarily my scene. But I feel this is something that I will put in my bag. I do want to go back and not just look at a variety of the stories, but also read some of the big Q&As, one Giorgio Armani and Aldo Falai Q&A towards the back. I'm not sure. What's your read, Rich?
I like it. And one thing this has got, which the others don't have, it's a theme. It's a very clear theme.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have any trouble placing this in an independent newsagent or a WH Smith newsagent. You know exactly where it's going to go. It's going to go straight into fashion. And yeah, part of fashion magazines I do like to have a nice raft of ads at the start, because they're as interesting to look at as some of the fashion stories.
And I think what's interesting is, so this, and just if you just join us, we're talking about System Magazine. I think that it captures a moment in time, because there's real content in there. And I think also good advertising does that. So, okay, you collect that, you want to revisit that 8 years later. And I think everything from Jürgen Teller on his bicycle, the insert that you get inside, the lineup and the types of ads at front. But then also I think the written content, the interviews, I think really mark a position, halfway through 2014.
Absolutely. And you get a nice little supplement of Jürgen Teller's work, nice and arty, fashion-y. The design's quite nice, one font, one theme. It's clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, going back to when we're looking at these independents, it's not quite clear what their intention is.
Mm. So which brings us, and again, unique as an independent, to, of course, have a glossy cover. You wanted to talk about a couple of glossies just before we go today. I was going to just, this is not semi-glossy, because it's got a bit of a waxy stock, but the international edition of Tea, and of course, this is being the supplement to the New York Times, and this is the one that comes with the international edition of the New York Times, where I always feel, I want and it's good. I mean, in our office, we're lucky that in London, on a Monday, we do get the Sunday edition. So we get sort of the thick, juicy one. But I always feel just a little bit ripped off, because it goes back to your point of the ads. I want to get all of the ads. I want to see if it's Coach sort of running 3 new spreads, whoever it is. I want to see what people are doing that season. And this, we recognize it as summer, but it feels a little bit thin, even though good journalism, and also just to, you know, see how they've had to up their game as WSJ Magazine continues to do an absolutely fantastic job.
Absolutely. I mean, the gloss that I brought in is Harper's Bazaar. Mm. It's one of the sort of magazines that first kind of got me interested in magazine design.
And is it the British edition or the US edition?
It's the British one. Yeah. I still prefer the US, I think, but we've got the British edition here. But, you know, back in the day when Fabian Baron was art director in the US version, I think it was fantastic. And this is, I think, what the independents could do with looking at something that they probably think they hate. They probably hate the fact that, you know, there's a supermodel on the cover and it's got, you know, a grand's worth of retouching and it's glossy and there's a fold-out ad that wouldn't have been cheap to, you know, cheap bit of media. But I think it's just well signposted and it's got all the things you'd expect. It has got expensive fashion shoots and supermodels and, you know, top 10 photographers. But it kind of delivers and it's permanent. And I'm going to keep it and, you know, and hold on to it and it'll kick around the living room for a while. And it might not be the best thing ever, but it still kind of packs a punch. It still has an allure. It's like a summer blockbuster. And I want to go back every year and watch the next one.
And as part of that, you know, here you've got a monthly magazine as well. So I come back to that also, you know, signposting and marking a moment in time that it's in the moment. And like, you know, and one of the challenges with independence is that, yeah, that sense of sort of collectability, but maybe sometimes not being quite as up to the minute as it could be when you've got a small print run and you actually could come out and turn this around, you know, at lightning speed, because if you're only printing 2,000 magazines, you can turn the press on in the afternoon and you're done by evening.
Yeah, I feel with some of them, with a frequency of one or two a year, I mean, I've forgotten about it by the time issue two comes out.
I'm jumping onto the men's side, not necessarily a glossy cover, but certainly a glossy magazine, the men's edition of Numero. And one thing which I like about Numero is that, you know, this goes back to the days when I think both of us were really starting in magazines when this came out, that it still sort of sticks to its same rigid grid when it does Q&As. I know what I'm going to get. Sometimes I'd like, you know, maybe a few more surprises, but there is the comfort of predictability. I'm not sure if you're a Numero fan or not, Rich.
Yeah, I am. I've been a fan of the Numero Women's for a while, and I think they've franchised it quite well, actually, as well. The Japanese one's quite nice. There's a Korean edition.
Exactly.
And I've collected bits and pieces over the years. I've got quite a few. I like the fact that about the only thing they renew over the years is they change the roster of photographers ever so slightly. The rest of it, the big bits of black Helvetica bold, love it. And, you know, it's one of those things, it is quite comforting to know it doesn't change.
Just a format, and I want to just end by talking about the Spanish edition of AD. But I picked up, this is Destination Copenhague, so a small little almost flip book, and the outside back cover says, "The books of travel photography in the Destination series are not travel guides, but an invitation to travel." And so I just, again, it goes back to signposting. It says exactly what it is. You open it and it has all of these just wonderful snapshots of restaurants and markets and places to cool off in and around Copenhagen. Of course, this is part of a bigger series. And then they just have the address and that's it. It's not trying to be anything else. It's not a case. One would imagine if you're seeing, you know, a bowl of granola or whatever it is in the magazine, they endorse it. That's all you need to know. So just in terms of actually being something which is visual, you know, an independent title, but I think, you know, doing something which has a very, very distinct point of view and also, yeah, and very much an economy of words as well, but yet you still feel like you're getting content because it's considered.
Yeah. And it has a charm and it's cool and Scandinavian, but you know, you see a nice piece of design in the shop, you want to go to the shop. Sometimes you don't need 75 words about it. You know, sometimes just a visual and an address is enough.
I thought we would end the program with a bit of a tribute today. And we're looking at the May 2014 issue of Spanish AD, which, of course, is Architectural Digest. And this is a magazine that we've talked about many times over the years. I think that there's always been a very strong friendship, I think, between Monocle and this particular edition of AD. And I'm sure many of our listeners will know, though, that some weeks ago, the editor, Montse Cuesta, died of cancer, and she had a long fight with it, had recovered for a period, but sadly passed away. And I just, she has, you know, of course, a remarkable team, but I think it was one of those messages that you heard, you just think, not, of course, just wondering what happens to the brand, but you just think that here's the passing of someone who is just, I think, a really remarkable editor, because it's very difficult, I think, to take a franchise, and just as you were talking about Numero, Rich, that Montse was able to take this title and just really put her own mark on it. And, you know, it has, you'd really feel it has nothing to do with the Italian edition or the US edition, and I think was really able to pull streets ahead of both well, certainly the French edition, we long liked the German edition, certainly under Margaret Meyer's reign. But every time this magazine, you know, would hit my desk or I'd go and pick it up on newsstand, Spanish AD just consistently, it's just sunny and it just takes you to Spain. And you feel, okay, maybe I should go online and look for a house in Palma again. Or maybe I want to have a fantastic apartment somewhere high above Barcelona. And I think that, you know, she delivered that. And I think we know it's very difficult, I think, to be able to sometimes get a full editorial team to just pull ahead and always deliver that and do it with color and wit and without it ever feeling sort of remotely, maybe sort of cheesy or obvious. And yet it was, and it was always able to surprise every issue.
Yeah, it's a fantastic magazine. It's a great example of density. I think it's quite democratic. It never felt like this is about Starkitects or it's about, you know, £80,000 kitchens.
No, I think, yeah, there was always a real, you know, touch of humanity, I think, to the work. And anyway, I can say that I'm sure she has a fantastic team and they'll soldier on, but as a really fantastic editor-in-chief, certainly sorely missed. I think we're going to have to leave it there, Rich. Very good to see you. And we have a very busy week ahead of us. It's the July-August production week, which gets underway. And with a couple of treats, a supplement in the works. We haven't had sort of a significant regional survey, which is going to be going into the mix. And yeah, a couple of other treats and surprises as well. So we'll look forward to spending a few, hopefully not too many long evenings next week, though it is, of course, a bank holiday weekend here in London. That brings us to the end of this 91st edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Boulay. Special thanks, of course, to Richard Spencer-Prowler, creative director. Our producer today was David Pleasant, and our studio manager was Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, from me, Tyler Boulay, goodbye.